also invite you to to listen, really staying connected with your own presence, and again with that sense of really feeling the receptivity, letting it wash through you, trusting that you'll take what's helpful and tune into it in a way that is, you know, kind of like let it meet, letting the words sort of meet you in your mind, in your heart, you know, in your citta, in the Buddhist terminology. So we're not just meeting the words and the teachings with our thinking bit of our mind, but also trying to include the whole thing, the whole body. So, you know, sometimes the things we most need to hear touch us, you know, kind of not just in our kind of thinking bit, but our... So maybe we suddenly get a rush of, you know, like, whoa, I feel something in our hands or our torso or something, and we don't really know why. We can exactly put a thought on it, exactly explain why that bit, you know, but that's often the really important bits. So I'd like to offer some reflections on the ethical part of the Buddha's teachings. The precepts, they're called. And I wanted to talk about this because I was thinking, what should I talk about? I thought, well, surely that's always going to be a good idea. The path, the three aspects of this path of practice that the Buddha taught, and how there's the ethical sensitivity, which is why I chose the compassion meditation, the cultivation of that care and concern for ourselves and others, and the meditation part that I'll talk about more next week, and the wisdom bit, which I'll talk about the week after that. But of course they're not separate. They're not separate at all, really. But maybe it helps us to think and sometimes balance our view of what our practice is by considering these different elements. And in terms of the Eightfold Path, actually four of the elements of the Eightfold Path that was really the, you know, one of the summations of the Buddha's teachings of awakening, of this practice that can bring us out of unnecessary stress and suffering and help us to be a presence for compassion in the world. You know, four of those eight elements are very overtly ethical. It's half of it. You know, and it's so... I know sometimes some of us, me included, can get so caught up in, well, it's all about meditation and what you do on the cushion. And of course, meditation is ethical also. But I'll talk more about that next week. That's really interesting reflecting on this. Actually, it's in there too. You can't get away from it. And what is this? And why is it so important? And why is it so difficult? So interesting. And why, you might already go, oh, boring, five precepts, okay, I'm off. You know, can I get out of here? I don't know if anything like that might be going on for anyone. So I hope in this talk I can kind of maybe open it up again, or sort of both for myself and for you, kind of invite us in to be connecting with this part of the teachings in a way that feels that we can begin to understand or explore, make it an exploration, whereby we can see this is completely, totally relevant to every moment of our life, and totally, absolutely relevant to this very personal, you know, if you like, individual experience that's going on, our concerns, whatever they are. Mostly, you know, we would like to be free of suffering, I would say. Probably that would be, some version of that would be shared. And what the relevance of this is to that. And also our sense of our participation in the world, you know, with other people. And how much this cultivating this ethical sense, this sense, I'll talk more about what that means, what it means in these teachings, how incredibly supportive that is to a sense of happiness in the world, like with ourself, with our own sort of internal processes, and with our, you know, the way we relate to the world, feeling like there's a way that it's okay, you know, there's no sort of regret, or that we heal those regrets, that we kind of see the possibility of freeing ourselves through forgiveness, and, you know, through disentangling ourselves from guilt and all of these things that maybe can kind of grow up around our unskillful behaviours in the past. And this can really be healed. It can be healed. So I want to point to also some of the ways that we can support ourselves, perhaps in this exploration, in this cultivation, so that it can really become a great foundation and a great resource for us in a way that feels really relevant to us. So Ajahn Chah, wonderful Thai forest teacher, sort of summed up the one way of understanding that relationship between ethics and our meditation. He said, with virtue as the basis for everything you do, your mind will become kind, clear and quiet. Meditation will grow easily in this soil. So there's a kind of one motivation for sort of that living blamelessly. And what they talk about sometimes, the bliss of blamelessness. You know, and how much easier it is to meditate when we're not dealing with a lot of regrets. And that we can, through sort of this exploration, and of course it's an ongoing thing, because again in the tradition it's understood there's going to be some sort of, you know, variations of greed, hatred and delusion going on in us until we're completely fully liberated. So yeah, we have to understand that we're dealing with some forces and strands and themes and things that they're going to be around for a while, this kind of stuff of, you know, various kind of manifestations of these things. But that we can more and more become a place of safety for others. And this is very, very powerful, I guess, sort of the maybe another source of motivation, that we want to kind of protect others from us. To protect other people and beings and the planet, let's include the planet with this, from our, you know, our unskillfulness, our greed, our delusion, you know. And then we recognize that actually we don't always manage to do that. We do damage ourselves and others. But this aspiration, you hear that so different, it's like the aspiration. So there's not judgment, like, well, you ought to be a bit more, you know, blameless, you know, should be, you know, make sure you're 10% more blameless by next Tuesday, you know, something like, no, this isn't kind of the way to go about it, really. It is much more a kind of, the sense that, of the aspiration, it kind of, having that in our minds and having faith in that will help us, kind of helps give that motivation. Because we know that other people will benefit from this work, this hard work sometimes, isn't it? Really, really hard work. You know, to actually come out of our patterns of unskillfulness, which we could probably talk for weeks about what they all are, make huge lists of them on the wall, say, well, I've got 152, but I'm sure I haven't thought of them all yet. And, you know, and of course in the teachings, you know, you have some wonderful formulations of all this stuff, but we can sort of be simpler than that. We can say, okay, in this moment, right now, what is supportive of harmlessness? So do you see, it's in that way always relevant. So you might be saying, well, we're sitting here, you know, it's like, what harm can we do? You know, we're just sitting here. Not much we can get up to, really. That's one of the great things about formal practice in retreat. It's like you're sitting on the cushion, you're not out making mischief somewhere so much, you know. However, it's like, it's still possible, isn't it? It's so interesting, it can be quite subtle. Maybe you're subtly kind of judging yourself, I'm not quite good enough. You know, I should be sitting up straighter. Or I should be thinner. Or I should be looking more serene. Or, I mean, you know, I'm kind of being silly in a way, but this subtle violence that we do to ourselves in the name of self-improvement. Let us be rid of this. Oh, what a rallying cry. But it's to be rid of it is really necessary to know it, isn't it? To unhook from its agendas and from believing in that. So these precepts, which I will name them, but it feels to me incredibly important to kind of open up this territory a bit before we, there's the thing and I should do this and I shouldn't do that and then oh dear, and it's gone right up into the realm of superego and shoulds and shouldn'ts and, you know, authority and rebellion and, you know, and that can often get quite helpful. We're either over conforming or we're over rebelling. We just say, oh god, never mind, forget the whole thing, I'll just do what I want. Yeah, over-conforming or swinging the other way. Because it's hard, isn't it? You know, I remember years ago I did a counselling training and I remember one of the hardest parts of it were these ethical dilemmas we were given, you know, to sort of work on. Like if you have a client and they do this and that, there's that, what are you going to do? You know, and there would be one of these really difficult, well, I know you could say this or do that, but then on the other hand, that might happen, this is really difficult, what's the right thing to do? And I think that's maybe part of our resistance to really engaging with these, is that it's difficult. You know, it's not always clear. Like, what does non-harming mean? Like, you know, are you vegetarian or do you eat meat? That's an interesting one. And again, I'm not here to say do one, don't do the other. And maybe again, there's it's like what can we have the courage to actually open it up for exploration? Should we go on aeroplanes? You know, what do we do about that? You know, that's an area of real discomfort for me, increasingly, and maybe different for you. But it's like being willing to be troubled about it, to make the effort to actually ask questions, engage, inquire. So it's a very, to me, the ethical area, it's incredibly, it kind of brings a lot of life and investigation to the mind. Okay, so one of the things I also think is so, so helpful about these precepts is that they offer us something very trustworthy, not you know, just to take and believe and follow, but something that we can really take up as a guide, as an exploration, if we want. That there's so much wisdom in them that we can sort of benefit from. And I think, I don't know about you, but sometimes in your life you get really, really confused about what to do and who to believe and doubts and confusions about this, that and the other thing. But if you've got your basic guide, sense of your values, your ethics, that it gives you support with that. You say, well, I don't know, you know, I could do this and I could do that and I don't really know, but do no harm and then go for it, you know. So it gives you a sort of a really good foundation and a kind of larger sense. And this is something as well I want to say, I will, before I go through them in a bit more detail. When we take up something like compassion, or to explore the non-harming, or one of these precepts, we are also supporting ourselves by aligning ourselves with, if you like, a wisdom that is larger than our own personal, you know, conditioning, our own, you know, ideas about this is good, that's bad, you know, I was brought up like this, so I believe that, or because I was brought up like this, I will not believe that. You know, that all of that is so limited, and it's so conditioned, and so prone to fixed views, you know, and narrownesses, and, well, I believe this because actually kind of promotes my, you know, good image of myself, or, you know, all these things that creep in there, or I believe this because then I can criticise other people because they don't do that, so they're bad and wrong, and I can feel better. I can feel, you know, I'm superior to them because I have these marvellous beliefs. There's so many things you can do with this stuff. But to have this sense of the large, the goodness that you are participating in. When I was preparing for this talk, and I started to run the precepts through my mind, the words, and I was like, wow, this feels really good. Like something really healthy to be part of, to be reflecting on, to be aspiring towards, to be exploring. So to be part of something bigger than ourselves, if you like, to be part of this, if you like, noble practice of bringing, of learning to care. I mean, you know, learning to care. I mean, to me, I've still got a heck of a lot to learn about that. And the commit, you know, to let that really be, you know, every moment of life. And how that care is actually so connects us with wisdom. I don't know if you get, sometimes you think, you know, wisdom and compassion, the way that actually, can you see that? I don't know if you, like, when you have a sense of the openness and the receptivity and the willingness to feel that's in the compassionate attitude or approach, actually brings us to wisdom, because it's like we can actually look at something and see it. Because we're learning to sort of be able to be there and feel, if, you know, if it's difficult. I think that's so important to see that it's, you know, that obviously it works the other way around as well, that sometimes the clarity, the understanding, think about my foster father who died some time ago, and how difficult that relationship was, and how towards the end of his life there was this big shift that happened for me of understanding and compassion. And I think the two things really, they kept sort of, the more I could understand, the more compassion I could feel, and the more compassion I could feel, the more I was like, oh, well, no wonder, you know, he was the way he was. And it really changed a lot, and allowed a lot of forgiveness and a lot of healing. So let's see, I came obviously holding back from reading these out, aren't I? This will really put them off now. Let's see. Yeah, I'll maybe read them out and then talk a bit more about maybe how we can support ourselves in exploring, engaging with these things. So as I read them, and I've written these out on little cards, so I hope I have one for everybody, so you want to take them away with you. And as I read them out, you can just see how you know, what happens. And afterwards I'm going to invite you to talk a little bit with another person and sort of what your response is to all of this. And maybe you could listen out for, you know, what you don't know, disagree with or questions about, or sounds like, oh dear, you know, oops, or, oh, yeah, I'd really like to, you know, some one of them kind of draws you. So just listen, you know, with that kind of listening from your body kind of listening, and just see. And I'd just like to say also, I put this together from a couple of different sources. One, from the concept of mindfulness trainings from Thich Nhat Hanh, which I think is a wonderfully helpful concept, that we take on ethical training as a mindfulness training. So that it's actually, when we're committing to caring, it's actually helping us to be present. It's actually a mindfulness training. I think that's great. And the other source was when I was on retreat at the Forest Refuge in IMS in Barre, Massachusetts in the States. The version very close to this was on the board for the whole of my retreat. So every day when I was scanning the notice board for entertainment and information, I would read these. So here we go. So I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from harming living creatures and practicing compassionate action. That's the first one. And I will pause there and just point out these two parts to each precept. One is restraint, or refraining from, so if you like, it's the not doing. And the other part is the practicing. It's the cultivation, if you like, what we can actually bring into being instead. So I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from taking that which is not given and practicing contentment. So I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from harmful sexual activity and practicing responsibility in all my relationships. The third one. So the fourth one is, I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from harmful speech and practicing helpful speech. And the last one, I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from intoxicants and caring for my body and mind. Okay. So much that could be said about each one, and maybe, I don't know, again, can talk a bit later about how you hear that, what touches you from that, or what troubles you. And again, seeing how you want to engage with these, whether you want to engage with these. So what helps us with this? Just want to say a few things about what supports us, and then let's open it up for some reflection. I mean, the first thing maybe is totally obvious, but this meditation and this cultivation through mindfulness of breathing and body, through compassion, different forms of meditation, the way it's cultivating a kind of sense of steadiness and awareness, so that we actually have more choice, you could say. You know, so that actually we're not just sort of just floating around, you know, in this kind of sea of impulses and stuff, that we can actually kind of see what's going on. I love this, something that Reb Anderson, an American Zen teacher, said that I think it's wonderful about this. He says, Only by being upright in the midst of everyday confusion will we come to understand what the precepts are calling for at each moment. I'll read it again, I think it's so great. Only by being upright in the midst of everyday confusion will we come to understand what the precepts are calling for at each moment. So, you know, talking earlier with somebody about, you know, when you have that feeling inside of sort of agitation, like, oh, me, I, do they like me, am I going to be all right, or, you know, all the versions of that. Like, what is it to bring the precepts to that? But, yeah, it's like, that's where he's saying, Rebbe's saying, that's where we learn the true meaning of the precepts, is right there in the midst of our everyday confusion. I love that. And this, again, the uprightness. You know, there's something, I think, really powerful about what we can cultivate through our physical posture. You know, when you can... yeah, you can connect with a sense of strength when you need it. Ground, earth, when you need that. Openness, you know, you can feel that in your chest. You can actually... So there's this great resource of when he talks about uprightness, you know, it's obviously kind of can mean different things, but that sense of letting the quality of the uprightness be kind of brought into the mind through our connection with our body. That's really, you know, relaxing the belly. Oh, there's a big one, I reckon. Oh, you know, interesting. Touching the earth. That's one of the Buddha mudras. So, anyway, many different ways. There's probably, again, many things. Maybe a couple other things I want to mention. One is this practice of contemplating one's own goodness. As a way of, it's like, ooh, what do you mean? No thank you. Well, surely that's selfish, or... So this is recommended by the Buddha, so I feel like, you know, okay, no. But if you think about it, it's, to me, especially if we're given to a lot of criticism and inner harshness, and you're not good enough, and well, look at that, you messed up, you did that, you know. And you tend to... Perhaps all of us in different ways, you do tend to see the negative more than the positive. And this is, you know, there's some wiring in the brain, which is in this, I learned from this book by Rick Hanson called Buddha's Brain, where we tend to be Teflon for positive experiences, you know, just gone. Or Velcro for negative experiences. I really notice this. I don't know if you notice it. I think it's a wonderfully helpful metaphor. And apparently this is sort of evolutionarily, you know, conditioned into us, so great. But, you know, knowing that that's just normal, natural human thing is kind of helpful, I think. So what Rick is really saying, I think is really true, is that we can really helpfully sort of dwell on the positive. I mean, one of the parts of the compassion meditation and the other Brahma Viharas that the Buddha taught of loving kindness and joy and equanimity is that we nourish a sense of sort of goodness and gladness and sort of well-being in us. And that is so helpful with being ethical, isn't it? I mean, you know, I guess that's not rocket science in a way. You know, when you feel like you're okay and feel some contentment, you feel much less like shouting at someone. You know, I mean, so again, that's for you to explore. This feels really... increasingly important that we get so fixated on the dukkha and the difficult and what's wrong and I've got an oh dear and especially with regard to our own, you know, very imperfect history in the realm of ethics, probably, that it's so crucial that we do the forgiveness, and also that we, I mean, right now, I invite you, just if you want, spend a few moments and I dare you to contemplate your own goodness. Actually think of some good quality that you have, or some kindness that you did, however small. And kind of, that's not everything, but yeah, there is that. And allow yourself to feel that, kind of, Again, not as a sort of me, mine, oh, I'm so great, but more directly, again, the body and the heart. Oh, yeah, I'm all right. You know, it's like this being here is, manifests some wholesome qualities. Yeah. It's really, really important. So I don't know how that feels. I can see a few little smiles, that's nice. But maybe there's, you know, a lot of resistance around that. But there's something for you to explore for yourself. And the last thing I wanted to mention with regard to support is the support of the fellowship of others who have similar aspirations. This cannot be underestimated. We bring the good out of each other. And that really matters. Kind of both who we're with, and but also kind of what we do, how we are with each other, and not in order to be sort of some sort of saintly, angelic sort of type beings. I don't know about you, but I don't know. I don't think that's a terribly helpful way to go, really. Kind of that image of, but to actually be able to enjoy each other's generosity and friendliness and warmth and reflect that back to people, you know, appreciating each other. And it can feel so countercultural. Maybe, you know, I don't know about here, but certainly it's, in America it's a bit more cultural, but certainly in Britain it's still like, well, don't tell me I did really well. It's like, you know, or I really appreciate you. So maybe we have to practice our being willing to actually, you know, receive that, give and receive that kind of warmth and appreciation. But sometimes we just know it doesn't have to be said. But that we, as a community of practitioners, maybe you have other friends and other kind of communities that you're in, where you see what a difference it makes when you're actually really kind of tuning into that large, again, it's a larger sense of something that we're sharing in. And we're supporting each other in that, not because we want something from you or we're trying to look good, but because it's nourishing, because it's beneficial for us, and it will ripple out into the world. Okay. So I'll just finish by reading these again. And then we might have a little bit of fresh air. But I'll talk about that in a minute. Let's see. So I'll just read them again. I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from harming living creatures and practicing compassionate action. I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from taking that which is not given and practicing contentment. I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from harmful sexual activity and practicing responsibility in all my relationships. I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from harmful speech and practicing helpful speech. I undertake the mindfulness training of refraining from intoxicants and caring for my body and mind. So let's just sit quietly for a moment and let that settle. So may each of us receive the teaching that we need and may each of us find the courage and the clarity to act compassionately in the world. Thank you for your attention. I propose now that we take a 5-minute mindful break so we can stretch. If you want to go outside, just have some fresh air, or just go to the loo, whatever you need to do. And I'll ring the bell in 5 minutes. And if you could keep silence, I'd suggest that so you can we can sort of then come back and have some conversation. Does that sound all right? Okay. So enjoy your mindful break.